but make yourself accessible and are adding so much value, man. So I got to throw it back at you, brother.
Thank you.
You know, I come from a humble family that parents divorced when I was 2 years old, but born and raised in Sacramento area, in Antelope and then out into Roseville. And my dad's actually from Loomis, grew up on a chicken farm. He was the first one to go to college, only one in our family to go to college besides me. And then my mom is from Canada, originally from Austria, and she's the only one in the U.S. And interesting, both my parents, one is, well, both were really corporate America, you know, 30-year climbers staying in that path, and they did really well for themselves. And, you know, we went from living in an apartment to moving up to middle class, both parents kind of doing their own respective thing. But it was funny, you know, I remember early on both my parents consistently planting the seed in me of, you know, and nowadays it's kind of like shunned a little bit of like, you can do anything you want, right? It's this kind of entitlement mentality. And but for me, it served me really well, where I remember I was watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with my dad. We used to watch that show all the time. And I was like, man, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. I know it. I'm going to be a millionaire one day. And he always said, you're going to be a millionaire one day.
How much do you think your parents' influence really had? Because your dad encouraging you, saying you can do anything you want, or your mom or both of them, letting you watch that kind of show, getting excited about those kind of dreams. How influential was that?
I think, looking back on it, very influential, right? Because I'm a big believer, you grow into the conversations, you grow into the environment that you're in. Right. And so we've talked about this, but, you know, for a good portion of my teen years, I was in the wrong conversations and in the wrong environments, which led me to smoking and drinking and alcohol and fighting. And that's actually what led me to getting expelled my senior year of high school.
Oh, no.
And so it was interesting because when I look back on it, it's like my audio and all the things that I told myself and other people, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to do this and do that. My video, my actions and how my life was actually playing out was not congruent with how I was speaking word out into the universe.
Yeah.
And so being out of alignment was, you know, one, I didn't really know who I was. So there was that self-discovery journey that I went on post that. But I was, you know, one of those people where I was never the fastest, never the smartest, never the strongest, but I was gifted the belief that if you can put in the work and stay the course and remain disciplined, those make up for a lot of the quote unquote talents that other people have on you. And so I just always kind of relied on that of going like, hey, I don't need to be all those things. I'm just going to work my ass off. I'm going to stay in my strength zone, and I'm going to pound the pavement every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about, I think I just had a lot more stamina than a lot of people.
Well, what clicked? So you were a little on the rebellious side, as we might say, in high school. When did it click, and what clicked?
So when I got expelled from high school, I had to go through this entire checklist of all these things that, I was a 4.0 student.
Oh.
I was a multi-sport athlete. And so when I got into the physical altercation that I got into, I kind of got made an example of.
Can I ask you about the altercation?
Oh, yeah,
okay, because my son got
in. He's never been in any trouble, has he?
So I haven't got a kid about your age.
Get along so well.
So you must have gotten a pretty serious fight to get expelled.
Yeah, it was a felony assault and battery.
Okay.
So it was felony assault and battery because it took place on campus. It was still, you know, I guess in their wheelhouse, and so they had to do something about it, right?
Yeah.
And so I remember going through this entire checklist, one going, my senior year of my basketball season, which was my main sport that I played, gone.
Yeah.
My friendships and all the people, even when you're in high school, I mean, that's all you care about, right? Is who you're hanging out with, what you're doing after school, what you're doing on the weekend. So my world was really turned upside down, but it was a kick in the gut that I needed, because I had been getting away with so many things in my life that were kind of just flying under the radar that I needed someone to pull back on the chain a little bit and say, dude.
Was that the wake-up call? I mean, you grabbed.
No, so it was.
Okay, it came it later. Huh?
So
okay.
I ended up getting through that checklist, and I had the expellment expunged from my record so I could get into colleges.
Uh-huh.
Because that was what I was told to do. You go to college, you go to college, you go to college, you work hard, and you find an opportunity. And so I ended up getting through that whole checklist, and I was able to walk with my senior graduating class at Wood Creek, and I ended up getting accepted into the only university, which was UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, nice.
And so I was like, yes, second chance. And I fell right back into the same patterns of drinking and drugs and fighting. And I remember waking up out of a blackout, looking to my left and seeing this big 6'6 biker dude in leathers, handlebar mustache, tattoos everywhere. And he kind of gives me a mean look. And then I look to my right, like eyes are kind of, the fog's coming off. And there's a Hispanic gang member with tattoos all over his face. And I look around this holding tank and I immediately realized that, oh shit, like life just got really real. And I remember pounding on the door saying, guard, guard, let me talk to, you know, I want my call. And they said, sit down. You're no special. You're not any more special than anybody else in here. You get your one call when we call you. And that was like the big wake up for me going, this is my new tribe. This is my new environment. These are the new conversations I'm going to be in. And I just remember praying to God going, if I get a second chance, I will walk the path that you want me to be on. And that's the path I've been on for the last decade.
Besides speaking to God, who was that first call?
Pops. It was Pops. And I was kind of, you know,
what was his reaction?
Oh, he was, man,
you're at it again.
He was so disappointed because he had helped me through navigate that journey of course correcting when I fell off path, right? And fell out of alignment with my core values and the things that I was saying I was going to do with my life and all the things that I was working really hard towards. And so it was gut wrenching. It was gut wrenching to hear the disappointment. And also it was one of those moments where he spoke some wisdom into my life that I will never, ever forget. And it was that windshield moment, rear view comment, where it was, if all you do is focus on the rear view mirror and what's happened in your past, you're gonna lose sight of the vision and the big focus in front of you, and you'll crash and burn. So your past doesn't have to equal your future, and that was really what I call the fork in the road moment for me at that stage of my life that led me down a completely different path. And I got out of jail, and the felony charges that I was actually facing a lengthy sentence for ended up getting dropped because of other things that was going on with the other guy that I got into the altercation with. And it was this long story, but I was gifted a second chance. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I don't know how many of these I'm going to get, so I better do right by this. And I just made a commitment to myself, not anybody else, but a commitment to myself that I was going to walk with purpose and intention that allowed me to seek and discover what I was really capable of, all the things that I told myself of, like really know who I am and what I'm capable of and pushing those boundaries. And so I went and interviewed at like 20 different places. All of them said no, except for one guy. He was a small business owner, and that was my first exposure to entrepreneurship. I took a cold calling job.
Well, were you in Santa Barbara? Did you finish school?
I stayed, yeah.
You stayed school, yep. But you got a job,
yep.
While you were going to school.
I was working 40 hours a week for this guy. I was cold calling, basically doing anything that he wanted me to do. And there was about 8 or 9 college students working for him. And over the next 3 years, I worked my way up to being his right-hand guy, and he really wanted to have me take over his book of business. And I had gotten that taste of entrepreneurship going, I want to be my own boss. I want unlimited earning potential. I want to make right and help people achieve their goals. I want to, of course, you know, have that lifestyle, that sexiness. I was still 21 at the time. And so that led me back to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And I was interviewing for, you know, $30,000, $40,000 jobs with this expensive piece of paper that I had. And I knew that was not going to, I just didn't feel aligned with that being the path that was going to get me where I wanted to go. And I came across a Craigslist ad for be a mentor for a real estate investor, you know, one of those cheesy ads that I now know all the, you know, smoke and mirrors behind that. And that got me in the door. I ended up working for a real estate flipper for about 10 months for free. While I was, you know, studying to get my license and doing all those things, and I got exposed to flipping. And this is when you could sneeze and come across a foreclosure in Sacramento back in 2010. And he was sitting back, you know, making 50,000 a pop.
I was flipping a lot of houses right in there, too. That's interesting. Okay, so you were doing the same thing.
Yeah, so I was, well, I was doing all the work. He was making the $50,000 checks. Yeah. I was getting nothing. And at that time, I just remember feeling so excited that I was just in the hunt. Mm-hmm. I was in proximity to somebody who was doing something that I wanted to be doing. And it also gave me the confidence through that repetition to go, oh, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can do this for myself. And so I hunted for maybe another 2 months after deciding I wasn't going to work with that guy. And I was going up around town, tacking on those bandit signs up on the telephone poles mm-hmm. at 3-4 in the morning so I wouldn't get caught by the sign ordinance police. Right. And after about 200 or 300 phone calls of, you know, get your ugly sign out of my neighborhood, mm-hmm. I got that one call. That one call, and I think all of us as entrepreneurs can relate to that one moment that is kind of like that little fire, that little flame that's burning in there. The pilot light's lit, but you're just waiting for that one opportunity, that one conversation, that one resource, that one tool that all of a sudden is just a little wind that turns it into a spark. The spark turns into a flame. The flame turns into, right, whatever wildfire it is that we're all working on creating. And that was my spark.
Who called?
So I had a was one of the neighbors. They called their son. The son was in town. She was the neighborhood cat lady, and he wanted to move his mom out of the state, closer mm-hmm. to him and the family. The mom's house was kind of getting overrun. She couldn't keep up with the maintenance. There was some, you know, overcrowding in the house, a little too many mm-hmm. animals, and they wanted a quick sale. Okay. So all of those things were ringing in my ear like, okay, this is opportunity, man. Mm-hmm. This is what I've been waiting for. And I remember walking into the house, and it was like you could smell the cat urine before you even walked up the driveway.
Right. So she was embarrassed to probably list it and some of these kind of things.
Yep.
So you got the call.
So I got the call. I walked in there. It was a hoarder's house. I mean, we're talking ceiling to floor. I was stepping over trash. There was over 150 stray cats coming in and out of the house. So when they said she was the cat lady, like they underestimated the cat lady a little bit. And I ended up purchasing the property for $75,000. I put about $35,000 into it, and I sold it for $225,000.
Wow.
Using other people's money. I was still living at home, broke. You know, I didn't have any credit. I didn't have – my credit cards were actually maxed. I had, I think, about $800 in my savings account, so I couldn't really even pay my dad rent. And I just remember looking at this opportunity going, $100,000 potential profit here. And this is what I say to a lot of people, too, who go, well, I don't have the resources, or I don't have the tools, or I don't have the money. Well, resourcefulness as an entrepreneur always trumps resources.
So you went out and got other people's money, basically took on partners in this opportunity.
I didn't take on any partners.
Okay.
So what I did was I put a private money first. They funded 90% of that purchase price.
Okay.
And they also funded 100% of my construction costs. So I just had to figure out, how do I come up with this 10% gap of the down payment and all the holding costs to pay the first lender while I'm flipping the property? So I went around and I called 50, 60 people. Each and every one of them said, no way, you're living at home with your dad. Like, there's no way I'm going to give you my money. And it was that one person who took a leap of faith on me. Of course, I had all my dominoes, you know, lined up, and all the analytics and how I'm going to do what I'm going to do and the team and all that kind of stuff. And they gave me that 10% down payment plus the carrying costs of while I was going to hold the property. And they just got a return on their cash. Mm-hmm. So they got 10% return, a point or two on top of that. And I kept the lion's share of the profit.
Wow. Everybody won. And then that gave you the confidence, I suppose. I mean, how you think about that call, those earlier wins in life. I mean, how important is that in your confidence?
Well, I think it's really important, right? Especially like when you're on the early start of your journey, you know, getting a little wind in your sails is important. Because if you're just taking them on the chin left and right, it's easy. They're in that first 10 months of not making any money, I probably thought about quitting, quote unquote, entrepreneurship 6, 7, 8 times maybe, and getting a safe job. And when I got that win, it gave me that belief that it was possible.
So, okay, 10 months. So it's interesting to think about this because this is in a pretty condensed amount of time, right? You had some setbacks in high school, setbacks in college.
Yeah.
You sort of turn yourself around, finish college, good job, and then immediately go out and do the entrepreneurial thing or work for no pay kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what there's a lot of entrepreneurs that might be listening that are thinking, well, how long do you go? You went 8 months before you got your big, you know, your first W. Other people, you know, you end up dumping a lot more time and resources into something. You may even, you know, you're living at home, maybe nothing to lose other than your time. A lot of people are dumping money into their entrepreneurial gig.
Yep.
You're dumping your time into it, which is obviously has some value, but how long should people think about going before they quit?
Yeah, I mean that's a question that I often ask on my podcast, right? Of hearing really, really successful people and going, you didn't hit a home run the first time you stepped in the batter's box. So how many times did you step up to the plate, and how many pitches did you see go by, and how many times did you strike out before you even had a foul tip, or maybe even just got a single, or maybe a double until you actually scored a run and put something up on the board? And it's crazy how many people go 12 months, 18 months, 2 years. Some people throw their whole life into something, right? And so I think at the end of the day, there isn't a right or a wrong answer for how long you should do something. It's how long you're willing to do it for. You set that criteria up front. It's kind of like when you're investing, right? You don't break your buy criteria. Because the second I start breaking my buy criteria is when I start going against all of the things that I know have made me successful and are going to help me win. So whether it's, hey, I'm going to give myself 6 months of runway for this thing, and if I don't do X, Y, and Z by that time, then that's me giving myself permission to put this thing to bed and say I left every stone unturned that I needed to turn for me to then give myself the time and the space to make the decision that I think most aligns with where I'm going to next.
Okay. Well, okay. So thinking about this, so now let's talk about what your organization looks like today. Well, backtrack. That was virtually 10 years ago,
yep.
Right? And so a lot of people say, hey, it takes 5 years or so to get to you know anything about a business, right? Your 10,000 hours or what have you. But so you've been doing this 10 years. What have you become? And maybe we can walk through some of the lessons.
Yeah, a lot of feeling forward in there for sure. So my tree trunk has always been real estate, you know, and I've always looked at what are the branches that come off of real estate that may have buckets that I can capture income streams in. So I started out with my real estate team, a business partner of mine, Rachel and I. We started our real estate team. Within 4 years, we were Wall Street Journal top 1,000 real estate teams in the country. And then I started seeing how I was really trading time for money. And I was kind of in this commission check hamster wheel of the next deal and the next deal and the next deal. And I didn't see any real wealth building being done in that space, even though it was a great, it was the great front door to get me into the house. But there were so many rooms inside that house of real estate. And I realized that I quickly wanted to be in the investing side. So I started, flipping houses. So I flipped a couple hundred houses over the last few years. I've been buying rentals every single year. One of my rentals I just sold, taking some cash off the table in Oak Park. I bought it for $18,000 in 2011, and I sold it for $350,000 this year. So part of my success has been just being in the batter's box, striking out, timing, and luck, right? But just being in the game has been. So then I started, really sending a lot of business over to a construction company, and I saw how much revenue I was generating them, and I said, well, I should probably partner in a construction company. If this is one of my main verticals and I'm sending this business over, why not take profit share off of that, knowing that they were generating 20% profit margin, that was, dropping $500,000 to their bottom line every year. What if I could own 50% of that, 20% of that, 10% of that, right? So I got involved in a construction company, and then started speaking a lot for different real estate events and conferences and offices around the country, and started getting people going, teach me how to flip a house. Teach me how to buy a rental property. And as I started, I got into commercial recently, buying some commercial strip centers, a hotel up in Lake Tahoe, been working on a vineyard out in Napa. So that's kind of been my focus of continuing to sharpen my own axe and be aligned with the vehicles that are going to get me to those goals. But at the end of the day, one of my true passions is teaching other people how to, you know, sending the elevator back down. I'm a big believer in the barrel of monkeys method, which is essentially barrel of monkeys has always got one arm up and one arm down. And I'm always looking for the next person that I can learn from and add value to and model after. But I'm always looking to send the elevator back down and bring other people that were just like me and are just like me, constantly seeking growth and education, surrounding themselves with the right people. And so when I started getting more people asking me, like, teach me how to flip a house, teach me how to buy a rental property and cash flow, I couldn't sit down with all of them. So I was like, well, let's create something that's scalable. And that's where the courses and education kind of idea in business just naturally came from demand of going, hey, I have value in my knowledge and my experience. Why not package that up into a product that people who see value in that can exchange information, can exchange, you know, monetary.
How long ago did you start doing that? So you've had this success. I won't call it gradual. It's very quick ascent. But when did you decide, okay, I've got to turn this into a business model, share my information?
Yeah, this was about 2.5 years ago.
Okay, so it's pretty recent.
Yeah, pretty recent. The first, I would say, year and a half was great because it was all my warm people who know, like, and trust Matt. Inner circle, really, you know, I think in my first launch of the product, I did close to 200,000 on that first one. The last few years, it's been more challenging. One, because more and more people are entering the space.
Right.
And it's cold traffic, right? So there's a guy by the name of Russell Brunson, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. He's got ClickFunnels and funnel hacking. And he kind of revolutionized the way people can create informational products and market and sell their informational products. And so there's a lot of people coming into the space and what he calls, you know, a blue zone versus a red zone. And when there are a lot of people in the ocean, the blue ocean, or in the red ocean, right? There's just a lot of blood in the water. And so there's a lot of people going.
So is that becoming more difficult? Is that becoming more difficult generally, or is that in the real estate space?
Just in general, I would say, right? Especially with more and more people coming online globally, and then more and more people having access to a low barrier of entry for giving. You just got to be very careful about the next person standing next to you may not have anywhere close to the experience or value that you can offer or have, and yet they may be just a better marketer, and so they're going to sell more than you, right? So value doesn't always equate to customers, except I believe in the long term it will. So I think the people who are really being authentic, truly adding value, have experience and are, you know, practicing what they preach, walking their talk, those are the people I think are going to win out long term.
It's interesting because I'm feeling like I can relate a little at some small level to some of the things that you're saying. I have people come to me and want to talk about entrepreneurship.
All the time,
I'm investing. Can I get some of that information? So I'm trying to figure out how to help. I haven't created an online platform yet. If somebody's starting an online platform now where they can you know, they want to share their educational experience and they want to turn it into a business model, so it's more sustainable, right? You've got videographers, your video guys sitting to my right,
Tom
over
Lope,
there,
baby.
One of your video guys, so Anthony. So, but what do you have? I mean, it's a big investment.
It is.
So how do you rationalize how to jump in and whether it's really reasonable to do it?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, like, one of the things that I did was before, you know, I've heard two different beliefs, build it and they will come. In the education world, I'm not a believer in that.
Okay.
I believe you should test your audience, and that's essentially what I did. Hey, if I created this course with this things in it, with this access, with this and that, and all these bells and whistles, who might be interested in this for a price range of blah, 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 blah? And then when I had, you know, 400 people, okay, there might be some demand here.
Okay.
Right? Versus, you know, if you don't, and that's where I think you have to have a following, you have to have someone or a group of people that look to you as an authority, right? And I didn't be like, hey, I'm the real estate investing expert over here. I just was consistently putting out content, showing people what I was doing, social proof of my own stuff that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then naturally people are asking questions and starting to engage and starting to build rapport and trust. And after a while it was like, hey, do you have something additional that I could write? Mm-hmm. And so that's where it came from. And I think that's where people should really explore that is just start engaging with the people that already know, like, and trust you. They will tell you what they want from you.
Right. And would they tell you how much they're willing to pay for it?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, how much do they tell you? I'll pay thousands of dollars for your information. Because one solid house flip is, like, you can make 50 grand, like you said. Oh, yeah.
So when I launched my course, I had 180 people. Or no, sorry, 170 people on that very, very, very first launch that paid $1,500. Okay. My course now, $97.
Okay.
So, and again, that supply is everywhere.
Right.
When someone's scrolling through their news feed and they go, well, who's this Matt dude versus this Jeff dude versus this Cindy gal versus, like, how do I know who's better or what? Or right? Yeah. So it's become more saturated, which just means that you got to put out more content, you got to consistently add value, and you got to keep making sure that at the end of the day, what you're putting out is actually quality and that you are, because consumers are getting really smart now. I don't know about you, but when I see one of the gurus or somebody that's putting out stuff, after a while, you get a pretty quick feel of whether you feel aligned with them, mm-hmm. whether you actually like them, whether you want to learn from them, whether you actually think they're authentic and genuine. And that's where I think, though, as the consumer gets smarter, the people who are doing it the right way, longevity-wise, because I've always been a believer, my entrepreneurial mindset has been, I'm a crock pot guy over a microwave guy. And at the end of the day, I'm a millennial, so I pace in front of a microwave. Like, I want my stuff fast. And when it comes to business, when it comes to adding value to customers, when it comes to building relationships, whether it's with my employees or with my wife or with my best friend, I'm playing the long-term game. And I think when you're talking about building a community, it's sometimes a slow grow. Like, things, it's not lightning in a bottle where this stuff happens overnight. Like, you got to earn, especially in this world where it's so competitive and it's so saturated with distraction.
Does your celebrity status or your notoriety, does that lead you to different kinds of opportunity outside of just the cash flow of your education product? Does it get deal flow for other stuff?
So, I mean, the hotel. So the hotel that I just bought up in Tahoe came from a guy that had been following me on social media that about 4 or 5 years ago. And we started doing some kind of like men's gathering events for guys that are, you know, faith, family driven, fitness driven, business owners. And he connected me with another guy who then started following me, who brought me this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it came from. I would say I probably get a half a dozen to a dozen flip opportunities a year just from my Instagram.
And you're getting stuff that other people don't see. So, I mean, it doesn't mean anything if everybody else is seeing it too and you're up in a bidding war. But if you're getting an inside track or finding out something that's someone's got a pocket listing on or something that's just barely on the market.
My goal is always, in anything, is to go fish in the ponds that nobody's fishing in. Because when you look in all the other areas and do all the other things that everybody else is doing, it's like a pond that's got thousands of fishermen with the same tackle and the same bait box and the same fishing pole, and they're all going after the same fish. And so that's where, when I try and leverage some of those other channels, those other things where, like, when people say, like, oh, you've got a social media celebrity, I'm like, no, I don't. I just put out content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you've got a great following. I guess I just lead with content that I think is valuable to others, that I enjoy, that I feel is congruent and aligned with who I am, and let the chips fall where they may fall. However, I don't ever shy away from asking for what I want. So I will always put out genuine content, but I will tell people what I want.
There's a call to action always. Every time you put in a content. What would a call to action look like? Hey, I want to know where the opportunity is. Are you asking for them?
Yeah. Anytime I'm walking through one of my real estate investment projects or properties, you know, showing them what's going on. And, oh, by the way, I got some cash to spend in the next 60 days. If you know anything that comes across your radar that you want somebody to take a look at, send it my way. hey, I'm looking, right? I'm always telling people. And it's just kind of like a, you know, subliminal, genuine, fun way.
Well, interesting because, okay, so I'm in a, I'm not really in the real estate space. I've, you know, I've dabbled a little bit with some real estate stuff, flipped a lot of houses, used to be invested into a real estate, residential real estate company. But in the angel investment community, I think I'm invested into 36, 37 companies here locally, which is a lot, I think, compared to the other angel investors that I know.
Yeah.
And I'm looking to do a lot more. And so I just haven't found the way, and I should find the way to get the word out. Obviously, I've got a small-time media platform here. But I hadn't really thought about saying, hey, if you know of somebody that needs the right business partner, tell them to give me a call.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, one of my early mentors told me when I was a real estate agent, like, don't be a secret agent. Mm-hmm. Don't expect people to be like, oh, everybody knows Mark is the man that needs to invest in my business. You kind of got to become that guy where everybody goes, oh, yeah.
He's the guy. Yeah.
He's the guy, right? And so that my thing is going, I don't ever want people to think about me and go, what does that guy do?
Right.
I want people to go, oh, yeah, Matt's a real estate investor. Like, you got to go talk to him.
Okay.
So like that, whatever your identity is, turn the volume up on that identity is what I always tell people of going, turn the volume up on your identity. Like, don't try and play behind the curtain. Don't try and play small. Like, you got big goals, big dreams. You're already walking down a path that a lot of people are scared to walk down as an entrepreneur. You might as well go balls to the wall, turn that volume all the way up and be proud of that. And of course, navigate accordingly and course correct and take the feedback and the input and just be more of you. And when I got the confidence to do that and kind of stepped outside of like, what's everybody going to think of me? I don't want to come off as arrogant.
Right.
You don't have to do it. You don't have to be anything but you is what I always tell people. Like, if you're a humble person, if you're a confident person, then don't try and be funny if you're not funny. If you're, you know, not loud and obnoxious, don't be loud and obnoxious. Like, just be more of you, but turn the volume up on that so people can get a window into the person that they most likely are going to end up wanting to do business with or adding value to or building a relationship with in some capacity. And that's all people I think need to get a little bit more comfortable with, is like, who gives a shit what everybody else thinks of you? If you feel confident that you're aligned with who you are at the core,
just be you. I love that. And if there are people that don't like you, water off your back.
I call it the swan effect. Like, I sleep well at night, every single night, knowing that I do right by people, that I care about my family, that my priorities are in check, that all of my core values I feel confident in. Like, I've done a lot of work on myself over the last 10 years of going, like, who the hell is Matt Aitchison? Like, I put in the work on myself every day, obsessively, more than I do on my business. And as I got to know more and more of who that person was, I started to get more and more comfortable with going, if I'm just more of the organic Matt and I show up as that person every single day and every opportunity and every experience and every relationship and every conversation, those are just going to be more of organic reflections of people that align with the real Matt versus me going like, I should probably not say that around this person, or I shouldn't do that. Of course, you got to have certain filters in certain situations. But at the end of the day, the more you can be naked of who you truly are, the more people are going to go, I like that guy.
It's just easier.
We don't have to. And usually for me, I go within a couple minutes, I feel like I can gauge somebody and go, I really like that person, or I'm going to want to know that person a little bit more. And then there's other people where I'm like, I don't know. I can't put my thumb on that person. And then hindsight 50-50, looking back going like, I was right. So the more true you can be to who you really are, I feel like the more your world is going to reflect that.
So if somebody get into this now, say they're early on, say it's me, for example, like I've got started, I have a point of view, I know about angel investing, I see deal flow that probably other people don't see because I'm getting known a little bit, but to sort of turn it up a notch, how do you get into this setting up your own educational product and stuff? Is that just hire a video guy and have him record you teaching? What would you advise to somebody?
Gosh, nowadays it's so easy. Anthony and I have been studying this over the last, you know, 2-3 years. And I mean, there are kids 16, 17, 18 years old, literally sitting at their computer desk in their mom's house, making six figures a month just by recording themselves and what they're doing, and that's their course.
Right.
So what people think of, like, I went way overboard and I was like, oh, I'm going to hire somebody and I'm going to write out scripts and I'm going to have a workbook and I'm going to have all these modules dialed in. And that's exactly what I did. And looking back, I didn't need to do that.
Hmm.
Now, I will say I'm glad I did do that because I'm proud of my product and it stands on its own. But at the end of the day, like, I would say don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
Get into it, especially with the low barrier of entry nowadays. If you have a camera and you can find some basic editing software, and there's either Kajabi or Thinkific, there's so many different course hosting platforms out there where you
right.
can put your course up in there. They allow you to set up all the email funnels right there, the checkout pages. Like, it's so simple now. And if there's anybody that wants to have a course, record the questions that you're consistently getting asked,
right,
and break those things up into, you know, some kind of framework or structure.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I did.
And
in the
beginning. And this this software or whatever, this these websites, these platforms, they will tell you how to monetize it too. So you do this work and then you get on this. I mean, what happens?
Yeah. I mean, basically you get your platform, right?
Yeah.
You got your product. Now you need to learn how to market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because just because you got the product, and once you get through your warm sphere of people that go, hey, Mark, whatever you got, I want to buy.
Yeah.
Right?
What is it, a 20-minute video? What is it that they want? What do people want to watch these days? Because aren't people's attention spans getting a little
shorter?
They
are. So, like, most of my videos are, let's say, 3 to 7 minutes long.
Okay.
But there are hours and hours and hours of content in there. So you can record, you know, an hour-long video and chop that up into 50, 60 videos if you wanted to.
Okay.
Right?
What's most appetizing right now to the buyer, to the investor? In your world, what do they want to buy?
I think it all depends on the topic that you're talking
okay.
about, right? Like, if you're trying to teach somebody, you know, a really in-depth tactical strategy, you trying
right.
to do that in 3 minutes to 5 minutes is going to be a challenge, right?
Okay.
Versus if it's kind of a 30,000-foot view or perspective on something, right, then I think you can condense it and compress it a little bit. So it just depends on how long do you think.
And then
you
they pay. So some of your content is free, right? Your Instagram. Hey, follow me on Instagram. You can get a lot of my content. But if you want more, then you go over here and join what? The club, or you
yeah,
pay a
so,
subscription fee?
Yeah, so you got either a subscription model, then you can step up to a group coaching model,
mm-hmm.
then you can step up to more of a one-on-one model. Right, there's so many different coaching models and really course and education models out there. I think in general is your low barrier of entry product, just to get them in the door, is most important to incubate that trust. And then the more you're doing what it is that they came in there for in the first place, they're going to go, okay, like, he gave me his education. Now I want more proximity to this person.
Mm, okay.
Right? And so that's where you start seeing people, what they call ascending them up the ladder.
You do a mastermind type of groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that kind of stuff?
Yep.
And that's for the people that want to maybe pay a little more money. They want FaceTime with you. Maybe they're on a Zoom call.
Correct.
You do that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So we have more of, in like our Rich Life Academy, which is really real estate entrepreneurs and investors building wealth in that vehicle while building wealth in other areas of their life as husbands and wives, fathers, mothers, with their health, giving back. So outside of just building wealth in real estate, we do focus on building richness and other pillars of life
okay,
too.
Yeah.
And so we have coaching calls where we bring in other speakers, other entrepreneurs to come on, give them live Q&As where they can ask questions. We do tactical trainings on specific strategies within real estate investing. And then there's the one-on-one side where I consult with only a handful of people because I don't have the bandwidth for it.
Yeah.
When you're trading that one-on-one time. But I do that with a select few.
When people get in there, I'm thinking of a couple of value adds. I mean, there's a community, so people are making strengthening relationships with one another, maybe even finding out about deal flow or
yep.
other like tricks of the trade, making friends. And then accountability or something. When you show up on a call, I've spoken to a couple mastermind groups, and I could see the accountability factor when they're in a room of other. One of them I'm thinking of is a bunch of gym owners, and they're kind of holding each other accountable.
Yeah, I call that living above the line. So we have an actual product in our kind of coaching model that is called Extreme Accountability. And it's where we package five people with one success mentor who tracks all their goals and all of their KPIs and metrics that they believe when done lead them to achieving their goals for the first half of the call. And then the second half of the call is them bringing to the call a topic or a challenge that they're working through that they want collective brain power attacking together. And so we do that in units of five people. And so it's amazing to see once you give someone else permission to call you out on your bullshit and hold you accountable to a standard that you have opted into and agreed to up front, your game is naturally elevated, just scientifically proven. And you know, it's funny, the people who say they want accountability but don't really follow through on it, they are ultimately the people that never wanted accountability in the first place, right?
How do you weed them out? Because I can see one, you know, in every group, there's one person that has got the extra money to throw into the program, but they don't have the extra heart to throw into the program when everybody else is taking it seriously, and the other person really is riddled with these weaknesses that just won't let them get out of their own way.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, cancer is cancer, and if you don't cut it out, it spreads.
Yeah. Have you had to do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we are ruthless with that. I'm ruthless with the accountability that I have for myself and that I expect others to have, as well as the same standard we set for anybody inside of our communities and our groups. And so it's one of those things where one of my favorite quotes from Gary Keller, who was, you know, has been a mentor in the real estate world for me.
Yeah, that's Keller Williams guy, right?
Yep.
Yep.
I'm a loving human being, but my standards are not. And when you talk about someone who is ruthless, and I mean ruthless with his standards, like I've seen him do things over his real estate investing career that I've only been witness to, let's say in the last 10 years, and being like, man, that's pretty harsh. But at the end of the day, he has always been crystal clear with what his standards and expectations are. And the second somebody doesn't uphold those standards that they opted into and they bought into and they said, if I don't do these things, I'm clear on what the repercussions are, he's an executioner when it comes to people that don't uphold their standards. So I think that applies to any area of life or business, right? Is if you can't remain accountable to yourself, you will not thrive. It's not sustainable. Like if you can't become self-disciplined, Jocko Willink is one of my favorite guys that I love to follow, and discipline equals freedom.
Yeah. Discipline. That's the Navy SEAL guy, huh?
Yeah, and he's insane. And the discipline side with the accountability side, I think when you really compare those things together, I mean, life potential becomes limitless.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about my small town here. So as you know, my son Marcus, he's coaching baseball with my grandson's playing Little League on the same place I played at. So I'm this person that really loves my hometown, and you are one of the most successful people in our little hometown here, right in the South Placer, which is part of the Sacramento area. You know, 31, and you're doing all this stuff. And I always like to expect, even with the kids I coached on the football field and so on, I kind of like try to project where they're going to be when they're like 55, 65. So look, you have had
if anybody
this fast
would have tried
track,
to project me, right, man, they would have been way off.
You fooled the, who was the athletic director? Was it Donnell? Was the athletic director over at Marianne Donnell?
She was amazing.
Yes.
She's amazing. And then we had, I'm trying to think of.
So I know some of those people at Wood Creek High School, and I can only imagine this guy with all his potential, 4.0, good athlete, but he's a little high-strung, maybe.
Yeah.
So
that's
okay,
a nice way of saying it.
But now you've sort of, like, you've solved a lot of those things, and you've grown fast in this last 10 years. But, I mean, if we were projecting you out, I mean, what's the vision for this opportunity that you've created for yourself? Because it's really, your ascent is fast still. It's not like you've flattened out or plateaued.
I'm looking at, you know, my goal is always to continue to get on an elevator every year and go up a couple floors. If I can skip a couple floors, that's always my goal. The way that I've been able to do that is just, again, surrounding myself with people like Anthony, surrounding myself with mentors who are way faster, way smarter, way stronger in the areas that I'm weak at, and me trusting that they can do it way better and staying out of their way. So my goal is to continue to do that in my wealth building pillar of real estate. So one of my big 2020 goals is to start a real estate investment fund that can start going after some larger assets on a much bigger scale. That's just where I see it being more aligned with my long-term vision. And, you know, I will always have kind of the real estate education and investing and wealth building space because it's a passion. It's, I mean, I eat, sleep, and breathe it every single day. So why not talk more about it and share more of it, which ultimately serves me selfishly. And two, I really get fired up seeing someone get that first little win or that little aha or that message, you know, from somebody that messaged me from Ghana that said that they started their first business. Wow. And they made their first $1,000 because they listened to the, like, little things like that are going, hey, money's great. But at the end of the day, like, if that's all I'm showing up for and that's all that fires me up, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. What really fires me up every day is going, whose life can I change today? How can I change my own life? How can I be a better role model for my daughters to show them what's possible when you put yourself in a position to have integrity, to work hard, to do the right thing, to treat others with respect? And those are a lot of the core values that we talk about in our family. It's things that we talk about in the business. So my goal is to continue on that path, expanding that vision. I expect to have hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate assets, you know, within under my belt along the journey, and really to be able to use and leverage that to create a legacy, not just for my family, but for anybody else that follows that same path and dream as well.
Exciting stuff. Well, just advice, if you think about the next Matt Aitchison out there that's sort of maybe coming off a couple of hard knocks, but you know he or she has something special inside. The dream is still alive. I mean, what would you say to the next person in line?
Yeah.
To that next monkey in the room,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, there's really a couple of things, right? And you could go on with entrepreneurial tips and, you know, like motivational, you know, ideas for people to latch onto. I would say the number one hack for me when people are like, how do you do so much? How have you covered so much ground in such a short amount of time? I go, when I really think about it, I go, well, it's the greatest life and business hack for me has been mentorship. To be able to tap into someone else's resources that took them years to gather, wisdom that took them decades to get, mistakes that I could avoid making that they've already gone through the fire on, accelerate the learning and the achievement just by tapping into those people have literally been my success hack. So if you can, and I, again, if you have the luxury of working for someone for free and just adding so much value, they can't help but want to make you successful and invite you into all of those opportunities with them or introduce you to those people, those could be the little things that people often overlook that could completely change their whole life. Yeah. And so I always am looking for that next door. And I would say you got to be looking for the door that opens because there are oftentimes not the right door that you walk through, but the wrong door that you walk through is got five right doors.
Yes.
Because there's been a lot. I mean, I'm still walking through wrong doors all the time. I'm failing all the time. You know, this was a great year for me real estate investing wise. It was a challenging year for me in my digital media stuff. So, you know, when you think, hey, perception is not reality. It is reality for a lot of people, right? But behind the scenes too, there's a lot of challenges that we go through every single day in our media stuff. And it's constantly changing. And, you know, so being transparent, and being authentic and being vulnerable, I think will allow you to build those relationships with the right mentors. And the last piece is just trust in that process. You know, I know that's kind of become a cliched statement, but if you do small, smart choices on a daily basis over an extended period of time, you're going to win.
Good stuff happens.
You're going to win. Like, you just have to believe in that. I call it the outlier's mindset. I don't care who you are, what your past is, how good or how bad it is, how entitled people may think you are, how, you know, how low your life may have been. I really believe that at the end of the day, you have to have the outlier's mindset. You have to bet on yourself and say, I'm not like everybody else. If you're going to walk this path, you got to go, I'm not normal. And I'm good with that. Turn the volume up on that, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that outlier's mindset, no matter where you're at in your journey, if you're on this journey and you're bought into this journey, you got to trust in that process. Be as nimble as you can be as aware and intentional as you can be, surround yourself with the right people, and trust that the chips are going to fall where they're meant to fall.
Matt Aitchison, he has built something incredible in this first 31 years. Look forward to what the future brings for you. Thanks for joining me on the show
today. Oh, man, it's been an honor, dude.
Appreciate it.
Always.
Thank you.